That spiritual warfare is a reality is rarely contested today. The Apostle Paul spoke clearly on the subject in his letter to the Ephesian believers when he encouraged them and us to stand firm against the schemes and methods of deception employed by God's enemy, the Nakash, known more commonly as the Satan. Just how far-reaching is the deception Satan uses? Believers need to understand that deception's primary characteristic, and the one that renders it most problematic, is its ability to entrench itself without being detected. Fortunately, God has given his people spiritual gifts to discern and see what is happening in the spiritual realm. What is a seer, and how does that gift operate? Stay tuned for a wide-ranging conversation on this subject and more with Doug Overmeyer next on the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said. You talk of other things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Welcome, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. You may subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. We would appreciate when you're out there if you'd leave us a review and a rating. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, Soaring Eagle Rad. Or, of course, listen to every episode on our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. My guest tonight is Doug Overmeyer. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. We're going to be touching on some subjects that might be, I don't want to say foreign, but might be somewhat out of the wheelhouse of some of our listeners. Doug, welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks, Pastor Mike. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it could be a little edgy at times.
Well, a recent article that you wrote appeared in Skywatch magazine online, and what caught my attention was the title. And the title of that article, as you're aware, before our listeners, is Parenting in the Land of Moloch. Now, my initial impression based on the title alone was, wow, this guy understands the spiritual context of the days in which we live. And then I next became aware of, and I familiarized myself somewhat with your work related to Seers See Ministry. So I'm wondering, as we get started, Doug, if you'd give our listeners some background on yourself and your family and how that relates to Seers Seeing Ministry and the research on that subject that you've done.
Well, sure. I'm not trained. I didn't go to theology. You know, I didn't study theology and Bible college or anything. I've been a Christian all my life, raised in a church. My great grandfather was a church planter, Pentecostal church planter, and then I eventually landed in an evangelical church. And along the way, got married about 18 years ago, and always sort of believed that Christianity was a supernatural religion. But you know, here in America, we're ingrained to think about the world through scientific eyes, materialist eyes.
Yeah.
And so when our youngest daughter, our oldest daughter, when she was about two, she started reacting to things that we couldn't see. And that was give us some cause for alarm. You know,
sure.
How do we process this?
Mm-hmm.
Pointing to things, talking to things. Things in the room are clearly scaring her, things that we couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And now my wife is a highly specialized therapist working with children who experience trauma and abuse. And so our child isn't that, you know. So we didn't really have a grid for it. We don't talk about it at church. You know, didn't really know who to talk to. How do you go to someone and say, hey, I think my kid sees things.
Right, yes.
What do we do?
And, mm-hmm.
You know, there's actually something in the mental health field in America, they use this diagnostic tool called the DSM, well, now it's the DSM-5, and back then it was DSM-4. And there's a, you know, mental health issue. They actually will diagnose you if you report seeing things that aren't there. And so, you know, we do what a lot of people do. We went to the internet, started Googling,
mm-hmm.
you know, these things. And, of course, you get a lot of, the only thing I could find really was sort of pagan and New Age
yes,
psychics
sure.
and people who practice Wicca.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the only resources. And then the Christian resources about this weren't exactly what, they weren't what we were, they were not addressing what we were experiencing.
Yeah.
This fear thing. And so eventually we became aware that other people can see things in the spirit realm around us that most of us can't see.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why aren't we talking about this as a church? You know, why don't we address this? I actually kind of went to my pastor about it and asked him, and he said, well, people already think we're weird. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, we're already a two strikes down for a lot of people when they come visit, and I'm like, okay, I get it, you know. So eventually I kind of grew in this and talked to a lot of people who could see in the spirit realm, and that's how I define seer. Some people have an issue with the word,
mm.
and they think it, I mean, it's someone who sees the future, and I don't mean it that way. I just mean
yeah.
someone who can visually identify things in the spirit world all mm-hmm. around us.
Yeah.
And they can't help it. Like, they just see. They,
mm-hmm.
and it's not their fault. It's just something that they can pick up on that other people can't pick up on.
Yeah.
And so eventually we started, my wife and I thought, well, let's just put some Christian resources out there. And so we started the blog, and there's some articles on there about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that historically, Doug, when Christians speak of these types of experiences, other Christians and especially the church, and I'm talking about the church, the organized church, viewed those experiences negatively, for the most part. Now I'm painting with a very broad brushstroke, and I'm speaking from my own experience here, having been a believer over 30 some years now, and just recalling how I remember people reacting to these types of experiences or hearing of others who have experienced the spiritual realm. They reacted negatively and generally chalked it up to some type of demonic deception or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think that it's turned somewhat today, because we do live in a time of increasing spirituality, and there is a new willingness to accept the supernatural realm as real, and I think this presents Christians with a golden opportunity to discuss and introduce the biblical accounts of people experiencing the spiritual realm. And of course, we always want to end up with Jesus, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. Our church sent a team. They set up a booth at this New Age convention in our little town.
Oh, perfect.
And, yeah, and, you know, it's a little bit, well, we have people who had some experience help us with it from another larger church in another larger town. They've done that before. Because you're going on enemy territory.
That's right.
You go to a
yeah.
New Age convention, a psychic fair.
Yeah.
And they acknowledged it. The host said, yeah, you know, I'm a Wiccan. I know who you worship. You worship Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't accept that. You're welcome to come. Don't cause trouble.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But what shocked us was how many people in this small town showed up to this thing, and how many of them came to the booth who are Christians, and they are having supernatural experiences, and they don't have a grid for it. They don't understand what is going on, and so what do they do? Well, in America, you turn to a psychic. They give you spiritual advice, and like, well, I'll tell you what that is. That's just such, and people kind of land on us a little bit about, you know, about the seer thing, like you're saying. It's like, well, where's that in the Bible? I'm like, where do people have supernatural experiences in the Bible?
Well,
it's take a page. I mean,
right.
There's all sorts of whacked out stuff that happens, and it doesn't mean every whacked out thing is from God. Don't, you know, hear what I'm saying.
Right.
There's a way to measure it, but it's we have the answer, and the answer is Jesus. Yeah. And it's stunning. People are so hungry. People are having experiences and they're so hungry for the truth.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that, Doug. And this is all part of the constant spiritual warfare that's going on all around us, whether folks are aware of it or not, whether they can discern or see into the spiritual realm or not. That spiritual warfare is going on all around us. And I'm wondering from your perspective, Doug, is it fair to say that most of the issues that people battle with, they don't start or they don't originate with an in-your-face spiritual assault that folks can point their finger at and say, right there, this is what happened. But instead, they often go undetected, happen in many subtle ways, and then manifest in some physical things. Is that a fair assessment?
They think it's like that movie The Exorcist. You know, they expect right away some significant creepy things happening, or to use a biblical example, they expect it to be like the Gadarene demoniac who you know was this guy who was running around cutting himself, and he was running around naked in a graveyard, and then he saw Jesus, came to Jesus. He had a legion, an army of demons in him, and people think, well, that's it, you know. But what I'm experiencing is not demonic. I'm just depressed.
Yes, right.
And like, oh well, or I'm just having a fight with my wife. You know, that's not a spiritual problem. Well, as a matter of fact, I think what we are truly experiencing in most cases is not the Gadarene demoniac. It's more like Eve in the garden. That was spiritual warfare when the serpent came to her and just questioned her identity, caused her to question her, whispered a lie to her, basically, about her identity, and she acted on that lie. And what happens, and most of us, we all believe lies about ourselves in different aspects. We act on those lies, and that is what the enemy can latch onto. And sometimes the enemy will create a feedback loop and just whisper and just grab onto a lie and whisper it and feed it back to you. And perfect examples are teenagers whose parents go through a divorce. And now some people are going to hear me say this and hear judgment, and I'm not judging. Don't mean that. This is just an informative thing. And a lot of people go through divorces. A lot of people suffer through a divorce. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to impose judgment what I'm about to say, but this is the truth. I've worked with a lot of teenagers whose parents have gone through a divorce, so they automatically assume that if the dad has left, and maybe married someone else with kids, and the student automatically assumes, well, I'm not worth loving, I'm not worth staying for, and the divorce maybe had nothing to do with the kids.
Right.
And there's all sorts of reasons why these things happen. But the enemy's going to latch onto that and reinforce this idea, this lie, that this kid is not worth loving, not worth staying for, not worth protecting.
Yes.
And that student is going to act on that, become depressed or act out in different ways to try to find safety, maybe in some other boy, or, you know, it feeds on itself, and spirits will latch onto that, and this is what, so that's just an example.
Yeah.
We all experience it. You know, you get your job evaluation, your boss says, you know, you're not a very good worker or whatever, or maybe doesn't even say that. He just writes something on your job evaluation, and you look at that and go, oh, I'm a terrible worker.
Yeah.
Well, person didn't say that, but that's what you hear because the spirit will whisper that in your, and then you start acting on it, and then next thing you know, you're depressed.
Yes.
And if you don't deal with that depression, one thing can lead to the other, and down the road, you might end up like that Gadarene demoniac.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very good point, Doug. Spiritual warfare begins when we allow influences into our life through any source that have a malevolent intent to harm us, and sometimes we don't even recognize those things. We begin to believe things that simply aren't true about ourselves, and as you clearly pointed out, our enemy is and his minions are quick to jump on that, and the next thing you know, you're carrying around a bunch of baggage.
Yeah, that C.S. Lewis book, The Screwtape Letters.
Yes,
he kind of in a fictional way illustrates that because it's, the Screwtape Letters is a fiction, but it's like advice from a demon.
Right.
Who's trying to lure a Christian away? And they sit around, they watch you, and then they just wait. And they it's like an intelligence network who just watches and waits for an opening to exploit.
Yes.
And those are lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are the avenues.
Yeah. As Americans, we make ourselves available to exploitation daily from multiple sources. I'm thinking. Right off the top of my head, the movie industry in particular is a primary purveyor of images and ideas that really can attach themselves to people, that can create false impressions and false images of people that they consume. But they're really foreign to the biblical description of who we are in Christ, and they do great damage to people. Now, you came to an understanding of these principles of how the enemy can really infiltrate our thinking and the way that we respond and react to other people. I remember hearing you talk about this on a different occasion. You had a taste for, and I have to tell you, I have to say, in all honesty, I'm one of those folks that likes the espionage and spy movies and the Bourne Identity and all this kind of stuff. So I caught myself rethinking that, Doug, as I was thinking about our conversation. But you share a story about how you were watching a movie, one of the slasher gasher types, and which you have a fondness for or used to, and then you realized that there's a connection there between consuming that and the way that you communicated and even parented. Could you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, sure. I like sort of the cheesy sci-fi movies. Cheesy, like, the fake monster movies where, the bad computer-generated monster will chomp someone in half and the fake blood splatters the camera. Well, I used to watch them all the time, and one night I remember my wife and I were in a fight about something, and I think I'm certain I was in the wrong. And to sort of get back at her, because it was her fault that I was in the wrong, right? I don't know. Maybe you never have arguments with your wife. But,
I'm gonna plead the fifth on that.
just some dumb movie, I'm not talking tortured porn like the Saw films, or it was just something on television, just regular television. And my wife wouldn't watch it. She went to bed. But about halfway into the movie, I realized I was sort of numbing out on this thing. I was numbing out this pain. And we can use anything really to numb out.
Sure. Yeah.
But in this case, I was using this movie. And watching people get killed by this monster, and God spoke to me pretty clearly. It spoke to my heart, not audibly, you know, but it spoke to my heart.
Yeah.
About why am I enjoying watching the destruction of the image of what God died for, what Jesus died for?
Yeah.
And you know, obviously these are actors, but he's like, you're watching the local destruction of of humans, and I love humans. I gave everything to win humans back. They're part of my family. I want them to be my family. And that was really sort of struck my heart, and I went ahead and turned the movie off, and I went to bed. And I made a commitment to God that I would actually give those movies up for 21 days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I just thought 3 weeks I'm going to fast these kind of movies. And so I went ahead and fast those kind of movies. And I told my wife the next day about it, and she actually said that she was praying for me. She was mad, of course, and prayed for me. She knew what I was doing. And so, like, that prayer had a direct impact on like God speaking to me, or at least me being aware of it. And what I did, so I gave him up for 21 days, and then 21 days later, I had DVR some zombie films, you know, some movies. I couldn't wait. I was looking forward to watching it, you know. So I waited until the kids were in bed, asleep.
Yeah.
Actually, I think we had one at the time. But and waited until Amy went to bed, and then I turned it on. And I couldn't, I mean, it was 20 minutes. I was done. I couldn't watch it. It was just an assault on my spirit.
Yes.
On my brain. Just looking at it.
Yep.
It was just too much. And I couldn't handle the violence. And it wasn't even all that violent. The fact is, when I had guarded my eyes for 3 weeks and purified them a little bit, even though I was hungering for that imagery initially, after a while, I wasn't hungering for it.
And
I just couldn't handle it. So I turned it off. And then what happened was the next morning, our daughter, the seer daughter, she's extremely sensitive to the spirit realm, she came screaming into our room. I had a terrible nightmare that night. And I realized that those 3 weeks, she had been nightmare-free.
Mm-hmm.
She had slept soundly all night, and that was the longest period we could remember her going all night without having a bad dream.
Yeah.
And it didn't hit me right away, but it really occurred to me that my actions as a parent were having... And maybe this is because of spiritual health of the household, but my actions as a parent were having a spiritual significance that was rippling to my wife and to my children. And me engaging my thought in something that was sinful, and let's be honest, enjoying the murder of humans is a sin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's like enjoying pornography.
Yeah.
That's a sin.
Yeah.
Right? Adultery. Yeah. And I struggled with pornography in the past. And we just need to say, that's a sin. And if you're struggling, any listeners struggling with it, go to Covenant Eyes. Covenant Eyes, and download that software on your smartphones, on your tablets, on your computers. Get an accountability partner. And that software will email every website, every search you do to an accountability partner. And you can't turn it off without calling Covenant Eyes. If you're struggling, guys, someone messaged me today, pray for my husband, he's struggling with porn. This is a huge issue.
Yes.
If you letting that in into your eyes, into your brain, you are directly inviting a spiritual influence to your children.
Yes.
And I can say that because of this. In the Old Testament, there are strict laws, very many specific rules about don't commit sexual sin.
Mm-hmm.
In the New Testament, Jesus says, don't commit them, but don't even think about committing.
Right.
Jesus is linking your thoughts to spiritual activity. In the Old Testament, doing those actions had a spiritual consequence.
Yeah.
Separating, just lots of spiritual consequences. In the New Testament, Jesus was like, doing the actions are, but so is thinking about them. Don't even think about the actions.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that applies for sexual sin. It applies for lots of sins. That guy who just cut you off in traffic and you really want to blow his brains out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe you need to change your thinking and start looking at this situation as God does.
Mm.
And earlier you said, you know, the enemy tries to, he tries to get us away from God.
Yes.
Get us away from Jesus.
Yeah.
And he does it subtly in a way that we don't even know. I mean, it'd be obvious if like you're in your room, in the TV starts levitating. Oh, that must be a demon.
Yes.
Yeah, no kidding. But yeah. The anger that you feel assaulting you, you know, or the injustice you want to wreck on your neighbor for, mm-hmm. you know, doing whatever. You know what I'm saying? I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
I'm giving huge generalizations.
Yeah.
Those are just as demonic because they are taking your eyes off of who you are, and instead you're relating to someone in a way that's not godly.
Yes.
And I think what we need to do is just be aware in guard our thoughts, guard our eyes, guard our hearts.
Yes.
And just in general, and that impacts how we parent. That impacts not only the spiritual lives of our kids, but also you start thinking about parenting in a different way.
Mm. Yeah. That's an excellent point, Doug. What coming to terms with that, coming to terms with this truth that what we allow into our minds through what we consume intellectually, emotionally, visually, what have you, it does impact our relationships. It does affect how we relate to our spouses, to our children, to our brothers and sisters in the greater body. I'd like to apply this to family relationships, these things that we've been talking about. How does and you wrote about this extensively, and again, a very good article, listeners, on Skywatch Magazine online. You know, go there, and the name of the article is Parenting in the Land of Moloch. And I think that was early September, Doug. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it is.
Yeah, I think it came out early September. Let's apply this to family relationships. How does what we allow to influence our thinking, how does that affect us precisely as parents? I know you've written about this, and I think our listeners would be better equipped if you could tell them about that.
Well, we tend to think about what I've noticed in just interacting with people. Is we tend to get our ideas about God from our relationship with our earthly father.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be good if you have a godly father.
Yeah.
But most people in America don't. And so they have really distorted views of God. And then we also get our ideas about how to parent from our parents.
Yeah.
And that could be great if you have godly parents.
Right.
But most people don't. And so what we see, people turn to the Disney Channel on how to parent.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this because we used to, before we dropped cable.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually canceled cable. But before we did that, we had Disney Channel on all the time. And, you know, I would notice that, oh, that was a good parenting choice, or that was not a great parenting choice, you know, on these shows. Or we get our advice from Dear Abby.
Right.
You know, what am I supposed to do with my whacked out teenager? So they write into Dear Abby, you know, you read Dear Abby columns, or maybe you go get a book or two books, but you can get books on any. Well, here's where I think we should get our parenting advice. How did the Father parent Jesus?
Yeah.
And here's how we should think about God. How did Jesus think about God?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think if we can, and this is just. A lot of us, we just need to change our thinking. And, I mean, my wife, again, she's trained in one of the best schools in the country in how to, on child development. And ultimately, the best advice about how to parent comes from speaking to our kids who they are, and they will parent, and they will act out of that. And so many of us, will tell our kids that they're bad or they're a loser or they'll never get good grades or you'll never measure up. And I know I've dealt with tons of teenagers who that's what they've been told.
Yep.
You know, or you're a loser or no wonder your dad left or all these things. And no. You are a child of God. You're also my child. So act like it. You know, I actually told my daughter who caught her in a lie. Our oldest, she's 11 now. She caught her in a lie this weekend, a couple lies actually, and I said, "That is not who you are.
Yeah,
why are you communicating like that? That you are a daughter of God, and you are a daughter of Doug and Amy.
Yep.
Act like it."
Yeah.
And she was not shamed. I wanted to shame her because I'm still human. You know, I finally wanted to lean into her and ground her from her phone. So, you know, my wife talked me off the cliff a little bit, but so that, you know, it, what did that do? I'm taking my eyes off of me and putting them back on the Father in heaven. And that's what, this is like a worldview shift. This is a thinking shift where we got to stop looking at our kids as just little bags of flesh and water and chemicals. And if they're acting a certain way, well, maybe we just give them another chemical to make them act the way we want them to act. Like, no. We are human spiritual beings. I mean, we are beings that are really pretty unique and special. We're not just computers. We're not just, you know, in our society in America, we just want to drug our kids to make them act a certain way. And well, let's take a step back and start looking at them like God sees them. Maybe they're acting like whacked out, spazzing out because we're feeding them what we're feeding them, or what we're making them watch on television, or the video games we're letting them play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe if we cut back on the sugar and maybe take the screens away from them and sit down and read to them. Oh my goodness, have you seen this? Have you seen this commercial? This is an IKEA commercial. It's the best commercial I think I've ever seen. It's in some other country, I think Sweden or Denmark, but it's not Santa Claus, it's the three kings that kids write letters to for their gifts.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So they had these kids who, and they asked them, what do you want the three kings to bring you? Which, by the way, I think is way more biblical than Santa, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're picking, you know, toys out of these magazines, and they write a big, long letter. And then they said, okay, now write a letter to your mom and dad. What would you like from your mom and dad? And each of the kids actually wrote, spend more time with me. Some variation of spend more time with me.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And then they asked the kids, which letter would you rather send, the one to the three kings or the one to your parents? And they all said to the parents. And I've looked at my own activity in the last several years. Is how many times have I looked at, was I scrolling Facebook or looking at the phone or looking at the newspaper when I could have been, and the kids are there wanting me to spend time with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jesus always had the Father's ear, and the Father always had his eye on his Son.
Yeah.
Maybe as we're rearing our children, obviously there's a time where we let them go, but when we're rearing them, I don't mean coddling them. I don't mean coddling our children. I don't mean being their best friend. I mean being their parent.
Yeah.
And I just, spending more quality time. And quality time can be meaning watching TV, but just, I remember my son, who's five now, he was watching some show on Netflix, and then I'm thinking about this IKEA commercial. I'm getting my, God spoke to me, and he spoke to me through this IKEA commercial. I was really moved by it. Because I'm thinking, well, that's how God related to Jesus. That's how the Father related to the Son. This is great. The Father didn't, you know, he was always happy. So I was sitting next to my son. I was wanting to look on Facebook, and I put my phone down, and instead I said, hey, buddy, you want to play a video game together? And he looked at the TV, he looked at me, he looked over at the video game console. He said, yes. He turned the TV off, and he went over and played the video game. And I hate video games. I'm not good at them. But I'm like, part of me was like, ugh, you know, but he loved that, man. And that is, you know, how many times did Jesus go off into the wilderness just to hang out with his Father?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to pray. And we think of that as like a religious thing. Yeah, it's religious, but he's hanging out with his dad. I mean, that's who he loved to hang out with.
Yeah.
And I'm in my own mind, I'm trying to, and my wife and I are both, we're trying to slow our lives down, make sure we spend more quality time with our kids. And I don't know, you had a question in there somewhere, but what I want to talk about worldview, worldview is how we interpret, it's a paradigm how we interpret the world going on around us.
Yeah.
And the problem is most of us have a worldview shaped by the culture.
Right.
And Jesus said once, they were asking him about money, or he was teaching on money, and he said, look, if your eye, the eye is a lamp to your body. If your eye is good, if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, it'll be full of darkness. He said, if your eye is bad, you can look at light and think it's darkness, and you can look at darkness and think it's light.
That's right.
So therefore, you know, get your eyes. So what he's saying is, if you have a bad worldview, you can look at at God and think he's evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you can look at something evil and think, well, that's good. Mm-hmm. And that's what we see in our culture. Our whole culture
yes.
has this warped worldview. They don't understand who God is because they don't, you know. So what do we need to do as just Christians, as people? He said in that same passage, Jesus goes on and says, so don't worry about money. Instead, pursue the kingdom of God. Pursue the rule and reign of God. And then these other things will work themselves out.
Yes.
So that has been transformative to me, to pursue the rule and reign of God as I parent, as I work at, you know, for my employer, as I mow the lawn, as just every aspect of my life. And in areas that I sin, the rule and reign of God is not in that area. I need to figure out how to get God's rule and reign there,
yes.
God's kingdom in that aspect, so I stop sinning.
Yeah.
Not because I'm afraid of going to hell. I'm not. I'm going to heaven. I believe in Jesus. He died and rose again. That's not the point. I'm not worried about afterlife. I'm worried about this life.
Yes.
You know, I want to live a godly life now, so when people look at me, they think, oh, maybe that's how Jesus looked.
Yes.
That's kind of a bold statement, but I think that's what they're supposed to look at the church and say, yeah, I want that.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a tall challenge, isn't it?
It is a tall challenge. We gotta renew our mind. Yeah, I guess what Paul meant when he said die daily. You know,
mm-hmm.
we gotta renew our minds daily. And
yeah.
I get these, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I get these sort of like a sine wave, you know, where I'm in a period of great discipleship and then a period where not so much.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm,
yeah.
you know, sinning like yeah. crazy or anything. I'm just not as focused.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but I want to get back, not to a mountaintop experience. This is not an emotional thing. This is like a discipline.
Yeah. Well, I think you're hitting on something that's very important for Americans, especially Christians, Doug, to reemphasize, refocus on, and really devote some very specific energy and focus on, and that is to value human life, to value people as image bearers, to get back to seeing people the way that the Father sees us. I heard that come out loud and clear as you were talking about parenting in these days. One of the things that was impressed upon me that you said was that we need to tell them who they are, that they're a child of the Most High God, and don't label them, don't tell them who they are by their behavior, because they're not their behavior. They
yeah.
remain a child of God even when they stumble. And I'm pretty thankful. That's good news for me, that God doesn't label me or see me by my behaviors sometimes, that instead I'm
yeah.
always his son.
Yeah, we want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never get over this one issue, or I'm just a, you know, I'm kind of a loser. No, God's like, yeah, loser. Are you kidding? I think I died for the loser.
Right.
A loser.
That's right.
You know, you're my son. Just
yeah.
Wake up.
Yes.
You know, I heard someone say this once. It's like when someone asks you, you know, like you introduce, hi, I'm Doug. What do you do for a living? Oh, wow, I'm Jesus's brother. You know, like, I mean, it's like that's really the best identity, because you know, we want to identify
yeah.
with what we do for a living.
Yeah,
and I'm not quite there yet, but.
Right. Yeah. In your article, Parenting in the Land of Moloch. Now, this is not news to me, and it isn't news to a good many Christians, but for some it might be. But you make the connection between modern day abortion and the ancient practice among the Israelites and their pagan neighbors of sacrificing their children to Moloch. That's pretty clear in the scriptures that that's exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Moloch that's the Greek name for this god that was worshipped by the Canaanites,
mm-hmm.
the Canaanite nations that surrounded Israel. And in some of God's instructions to Israel, he's like, oh, you need to, when people look at Israel, this is what God wanted them. He wanted the people and the nations to look at Israel and say, oh, that's what God looks like. I want that.
Yeah.
And so he said, set yourself apart, A, don't kill your children. Don't sacrifice your children to Moloch. Don't
yeah.
sacrifice. And you know, and what they did, they burned them alive. They burned their kids alive. And you know, we think, well, that's terrible. Terrible. What kind of parent would do that? I'm like, well, think about it.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of parent would sacrifice their child? They're sacrificing their child because they think that they're going to get some future benefit.
Mm.
They think that, you know, there's an invasion coming, and so the invaders are going to destroy their economy. So to protect their economy, maybe they'll sacrifice their oldest child.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, maybe there's going to be, it's like, I got pregnant, this is really inconvenient, we can't afford this baby. You know what? We'll sacrifice the baby to Moloch, and he'll bless us with financial provision.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they did.
Yeah.
Well, that's why people get abortions.
And yeah.
If you think about it,
mm-hmm.
people get abortions, they have their babies ripped apart, they have their babies incinerated by chemicals,
yeah.
and they do that because they think there's going to be some present or future benefit,
yeah.
some financial benefit, or mm-hmm. some, in, you know, the babies are going to be inconvenient, so they'll kill their baby. Now, it's pretty horrific. I mean, and there's some really tragic examples in Scripture. One really tragic example, Judges. Of an Israelite who got his idea, I think I wrote about this in the article, but he got his idea about God from these Canaanites, and he assumed that the worship of God should look like the worship of Moloch. So he went ahead and ended up killing his daughter after making a tragic vow. And that's what, in our society, we cannot get our idea of God from how the world views God.
Right.
They don't know God.
That's right.
We have to get our idea of God from Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to understand that Jesus, God, we don't win favor by works.
That's
we
right.
We win favor through Jesus' work, and we enter Jesus through faith. And then, from that position, we go ahead and do works. That way the people can look at us and go, oh, that's what God looks like.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
But I just, something it sort of struck me. They called this one little area where they sacrificed a lot of babies to Moloch. They called it the Valley of Wailing. That's the translation, the Valley of Wailing.
Yeah.
Because you could hear the babies wailing. They would scream whenever they would be burned alive. Well, in the mother's womb today is the Valley of Wailing.
That's right,
in America.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have videos, we know that babies cry out in pain
mm-hmm.
in the womb while they're being destroyed, while they're being burned with chemicals or ripped apart by doctors.
Yes.
But it's a silent scream because there's, you know, there's fluid, so it's a silent scream.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just something we need to just come to terms with. We'll have all sorts of justification. Well, it's my body.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it is your body. What does that have to do with anything?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with who God made you. God did not make a woman to, you know, God's plan for a woman is not to murder her child.
Yeah.
It's not. Well, what about rape? Everyone always jumps to that, right?
Yeah.
Everyone. What about rape? It's not the baby's fault that mom got raped.
That's right, yeah.
The baby's fault the dad's a creep.
Right.
If you want to blame the baby?
Right.
Well, you know, emotional trauma to the mom. You know, I got a cure for that. His name is Jesus.
Yes, amen.
Jesus can heal the emotional trauma and turn that baby into a blessing.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just get our eyes fixed off, get our eyes off of ourselves.
Yeah.
And back onto God.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get preachy there.
No, actually, that was pretty good. That would work on a Sunday morning for sure. Well, abortion is just one form of the devaluing of human life in our culture, Doug. We've got pornography, rape, murder, euthanasia, sex trafficking. I mean, we could go on and on and on and on, but they're all manifestations of spiritual warfare. They're all manifestations of the enemy's strategy of convincing us that life is worthless. It's spiritual warfare all around us. But there are some subtle forms of spiritual warfare too. And our children are experiencing those in our public schools. And a lot of the self-esteem, respect, anti-bullying, all of these kinds of programs that our kids are being indoctrinated in, they're not really what they appear to be, are they?
No, but if you want to see the spiritual consequence of a generation raised on Disney Channel. Just look this week at American universities.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's part of me, when I try to look at things from God's perspective, and I think he's just kind of laughing, like, oh, this is what you get.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you get. These people who are so afraid of being challenged that they are banning free speech in America's public universities.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's beyond irony. I don't even know what to...
It is. And, you know, and what I love, though, is a lot of people are seeing that it's beyond irony. They're just stunned across the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I hope, I believe, that this is going to lead to an awakening. I don't want to be cliche and say a great awakening, you know, but I think that people are going to... But where have we gone wrong as a society?
Yeah. Well, brother, I'm there with you. I hope that's exactly what happens.
In the meantime, it's going to be a decade before this sort of works itself out.
Yeah.
And we're just, you know, I think the society is kind of collapsing in on itself,
mm-hmm.
to be honest.
Yeah.
But that's what you get. That's what you get when you separate, see, this land of Moloch thing, I think it's real. I think that there is a spiritual entity over America, over Western society, actually. It's just ingraining Gnosticism into
mm-hmm.
us.
Yes.
And when you separate God, and you separate the truth mm-hmm. of Jesus from society, there's no reason for morality. You know, so what's wrong with banning free speech in America?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's wrong is, that's how these kids are thinking.
Yeah.
Because that is what they've been taught from I call it the Disney Channel generation, but not Disney, it's public schools. My own daughter, here's a great example, it's my own daughter, who's 11, she came home the other day, it's a few weeks ago now, and she said, oh, we did this, it was a skit on respect, on how to respect others. And I thought, well, that's great. That's good to teach people respect in school. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her, well, why? Why are you supposed to respect other people? And she kind of looked back at me, and she sort of thought, and I said, well, they teach you. Why do you teach? She said, I don't know, I guess because then I get something out of it, and it makes me look better. And I'm like, I said, you respect other people, so you look better. And she's like, yeah, that's not right. I'm like,
she knew immediately when you pointed that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, why do you respect people? She's like, I don't know. It's on the first page of the Bible. We're made in God's image. God's image. And then we had to undo some of this thinking.
Yes.
But, you know, they're teaching morality with no reason for morality.
And right.
It just doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work.
No. No. It ultimately ends up with narcissism, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
ultimately.
Yeah.
I mean, my word. The whole society. Think about this, Pastor Mike. We turn to celebrities, to actors for their opinions.
Yes.
About politics or anything.
That's one of the most ludicrous.
Actors.
Yeah. Are they acting now? When they give that opinion, are they acting? How do you even know?
It's actors.
Yeah.
You know, I read someone who said people value a flat stomach more than a well-trained mind.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, get the well-trained mind first, and then you'll maintain a flat stomach. You know.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
You'll see value in who you are mm-hmm. as a child of God, as God's representative. But
yeah.
Anyway.
You mentioned Gnosticism just a few moments ago, Doug. I'd like to maybe follow that thread for just a moment because it has come back to life in a very powerful way. Now, some people point to, the Dan Brown novels and Da Vinci Code and on. It's like, no. He popularized it for sure. And made some folks aware of what Gnosticism really, really is, was.
Yeah.
But it's been around for a while, and it's been really inserting itself more and more into religious organizations. I'm wondering if you could speak to that for just a moment and how that is impacting religious thinking today.
We as Christians, as leaders, and as just, well, let me tell you, listener, if you're a Christian, you're a leader.
Yes.
Because leaders are influence. They influence mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
And if you're not influencing people, then you are.
Yeah.
People are watching you as a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
You're influencing them. When I was a child, I've always loved books. I was at a bookstore, and I ran across a book called Holy Blood, Holy Grail.
Yes.
And this was the inspiration for Dan Brown's book,
mm-hmm.
which I never did read the Da Vinci Code. I knew it was about. I had no interest in reading or seeing the movie. But when I was a child, I think I was in high school, I found that Holy Blood, Holy Grail, bought it, read it, and it blew me right out of the church.
Mm.
It blew me right out of Christianity.
Yeah.
Because it completely... It provides this it's Gnostic. I didn't know it then, but it's Gnosticism,
mm-hmm.
and it completely undermined the resurrection of Jesus.
Yeah,
and who he is, and I just was completely blown out of church. Now I had to have supernatural, so I went to church still, because my parents made me, and I didn't tell them what I was going through, but I didn't believe a word that was said. I didn't believe anything in the Bible. I was in high school. And that was coupled with Darwinism also.
Mm.
We taught that in school.
Yeah.
And eventually, but I had supernatural experiences, and eventually God wooed me back. But I have to say, this Gnosticism is, we have got to open our eyes as Christians to what this is and see it everywhere. It's in all the media, in movies. I mean, the Star Wars films, the original six, anyway. I don't know what the new ones are going to be like, but they are just—it's just a Gnostic story. It's just Gnosticism.
Study
it. People need to study it because it's interesting. It's interesting to see it in film, and then like I can enjoy Star Wars and then still see the Gnosticism and not let it affect my heart.
Right.
You know, and then I can watch it with my kids, and we can enjoy the heroic Star. There's no heroism in the prequels. Let's just get that out there. Don't watch the prequels. They're terrible. But the original three, I'm a purist. They're great. And just we can watch those and say, oh, there's the Gnostic element. Okay, isn't that interesting? Now let's ignore that and enjoy the rest of the film. But it's in the Transformer movies. And I only got to, I only got to the first one. And it was bad, too. I can't believe people are watching these films. But I mean, I love science fiction films. But if it's a science fiction film, it's probably Gnostic.
Yeah.
And that is a huge influence on our society. I mean, more people are going to get their religion from, because they shut their brains off when they go and watch these films. And it permeates their brains. It permeates how they think about the world.
Yeah.
And some people they say, yeah, I'm a Jedi. I'm a Jedi religion. You know, they get it.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people, they do it as a joke, but it really pervades their thinking because it's Gnosticism.
Yeah.
And I think what's going on, and this is the religion of America, and this is something we need to address. And it's Gnosticism is the idea that the spirit, it's a lot of ideas, but generally spirit and body are two separate things. The flesh is evil and the spirit is good. And the whole idea of life is to get out of the flesh and transcend to a next level of evolution. Maybe you use technology to do that, you know, transhumanism, or maybe you use religion to do that and become one with the world. That's all Gnosticism.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
You get that in the church too.
Yeah.
Yes. So we need to identify that and get it out.
Yep.
But here's the thing. I think Western society is collapsing in on itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the illusions and we've taken out sort of the foundations, and so all these structures are finally imploding, and you're seeing that in universities.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing in that it's going to create soil, good fertile soil for the gospel.
Yeah,
and people are going to see that Gnosticism is a vacuous religion. There's nothing to it. There's no truth. There's no, and so they're going to be ripe to hear about Jesus.
Yes,
in that God is not one with the world. that evil and good are not just two sides of one circle, that yin and yang thing. Evil is evil, and God is good. He is separate from creation. And he's a person who loves us. He's not a force. He's a person who loves us.
Yes.
And I think I think also is going to happen is I think the church in America has so insulated itself from the culture that it has alienated vast segments of the population. And God is going to reach those people groups, these sections in society that the church is not reaching. One way or the other, God's going to move and reach those people. And they're going to start showing up in our doors looking for answers. And we as Christians need to get ready. We need to be able to learn how, and this is just average Joe Christian who goes to church once a week, maybe gives 5% of his or her income to the church, maybe a little extra on Thanksgiving, is a good person, believes in Jesus, but no, I'm not going to go preach. That's the average Christian in America.
Right.
We give an average of 3% of our income to the church. That person needs to be able to lead someone to salvation.
Yeah.
Lead someone to a salvation prayer and then get someone plugged in. We need, as Christians, to reach out to other churches and other denominations. Maybe we don't agree with in every area. Because whenever people come to us, they may not want to go to our church.
Right.
Maybe they want to go to a more liturgical church, or maybe they want to go to a less liturgical church. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we need to have friends across the body of Christ so we can get people who come to us. We lead them, we need to know how to pray for healing and maybe some basic deliverance. I'm not talking exorcist deliverance. There's levels, but we need to just be able to, someone manifests a demon, we should be able to, how to cast it out.
Yeah.
And then lead that person to Christ, and then get that person plugged into a church.
Yeah.
And we need to get ready, because there's a harvest coming, and if we don't, what has happened in the past is great moves of God happen, the church wasn't ready, and then you have cults pop up.
Yep.
You have distortions, and you have weirdness, and you have, so we've got to get trained broadly.
Yes.
Not everybody's going to be a pastor, but everyone should really learn how to run a small group.
Yeah.
Not that you're going to do it all the time, but, first season, God may say, and we got to start reaching out to our neighbors.
Yeah.
Not just, on Facebook and stuff, but, our actual neighbors. What if Jesus was literal when he said, love your neighbors? And I think, the Samaritan, I love those people. No. He's like, no, your actual neighbors. Our pastors, our church went through this book, Art of Neighboring, and where they asked us, do you actually know your neighbors? I'm like, I think I know the names of one of my neighbors.
Yeah.
And, it hurt my heart. I'm I don't think that. And that's kind of a cultural thing, because in America we move and we're busy and we're always moving and we don't have a lot of roots.
Right.
And what we need, what my advice for people is to, start at home.
Yeah.
And then reach out to your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And if your job transfers you or you move or whatever, you have a crisis, you move, across the country, then start over.
Start over, yeah. Yeah, for our listeners,
that's how we can really change things.
That's right. And for our listeners that perhaps may be pastors or Bible teachers or leaders within your church or those that just have a burden for sharing the gospel, look around in your church. If that's not going on, if discipleship is not happening, if training believers how to share their faith, if that's not happening, I want to encourage you to start that as soon as possible. Doug, I agree with you that the harvest is coming. We're headed into, I used to say the last days, but honestly, I think we're probably last moments. I see all the craziness around and it's just so irrational and illogical, and we are at a place where good is evil and evil's good. And Jesus told us that when those days come, we should be looking up and knowing that our redemption is drawing near. So I encourage our listeners to really get serious about that. And perhaps I'm talking directly to you, Pastor. You're not training your people to go out into your city, the neighborhood around your church, and share the gospel, invite neighbors in. Perhaps I'm encouraging you to do that. The Lord is encouraging you through what we're talking about tonight. I want to encourage you to be obedient and to do that. The time is growing very, very short. We don't know how many, and I'm not date setting. I'm not a date setter, so don't mishear me. That's not what I'm saying.
But it's so short in that I have a friend, not a good friend. We were good friends about 20 years ago, and, you know, life takes you in different directions. But
yeah.
Their 21-year-old son was killed in a car crash this week.
Oh, boy.
And so you just, life is, this time's short. I don't know when the Lord's coming, but I do know that I could get a car crash tomorrow.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, this kid got saved on Easter.
Wow.
He happened to show up 5 weeks before Easter, and for whatever reason, the pastor of that church, I spoke with him at the visitation, the pastor. He said, I'm making commit next 5 weeks, come to church. Next, even if it's not your home, if you're mm-hmm. just visiting and you don't have a home church, come here next 5 weeks. And the guy did.
Mm-hmm.
He was into drugs, and he was not, he was not where he needed to be. And Easter Sunday, he completely changed. And he was eventually on the worship team, and then boom, a few months later, he's dead.
Wow.
Dead.
Wow.
But he's alive.
That's right. Amen. That's right.
So, time is short. Man, let's not wait.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We have to open our eyes to what is God doing? That's what Jesus did. He opened his eyes. What is God doing? Who is God working with?
Yep.
And then just be available. We don't have to go preaching on the street corner, but just be available.
Right.
If someone's suffering, be by that person.
And, yes.
And be ready. At my own church, I taking a class on prayer, and then they taught us sort of the salvation prayer. There's debates on how biblical that is, right? But there's value in it, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
To get someone going.
Yeah.
And that week, I used it with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't believe it. Leading, and I'm trying to remember, God was completely moving. I'm talking, well, what was it today? I was trying to remember. But,
yeah.
So we just, and then that person kept coming and, had made a faith, had a transformative life. But, so we need to be trained. We just regular lay people, and challenged. It's okay to be challenged. Maybe not every Sunday, but challenged to grow.
Yes.
So we come out of church thinking, man, that was, I didn't get all that, but it was good.
Yeah.
I'm back next week for more.
Yes. Absolutely. Yep. That's good encouragement. Any new projects you're working on, Doug? Currently?
Yeah, I have three little things. The writing is all sort of part-time on the side and just doing it because I feel God's calling me to, but I'm working on an e-book on how to hear God. It sounds mystical. It really isn't. It's about how to read the Bible and hear God through the Bible, how to pray, basically, mm-hmm. the Lord's Prayer. But it's basic training, man. It's the foundation. It's how to tackle someone, basically, right? In football.
Yeah,
you got to learn it's just a foundation. How to set a kick without moving back.
Yeah.
So, that'll be an e-book on my website. It'll be free. And then I'm working on a book on spiritual house cleansing. Come out. Next, I'm excited about that. It ended up being a lot longer than I expected because it's really about getting sin out of your life. But
that sounds very good. Is that going to be an e-book, too?
No, well, they will all be e-books, so that one's going to be a print edition also.
Oh, okay.
And then
those will be available on your website?
Yes, and then the spiritual one, hopefully I'll get that on Amazon. That'll be more widely distributed.
Yeah.
Spiritual house cleansing. But just if they come to the website, crc.com, or also revealthethekingdom.com.
Yes.
I've added that. They can sign up for updates or just check back periodically.
Yeah. A lot of good articles, folks, on both of those websites. I've checked them out recently. If you're interested in worldviews and what a biblical Christian theistic worldview is, then I encourage you to visit Doug's website and you'll find that information there. CRC.com, if you're interested in this area of the supernatural realm, which most people are today. It's become a very commonplace conversation And in many places, folks are willing to talk about that now. And I see that as a very good thing, because that provides an opportunity for believers to talk about Jesus. So, Doug, anything else you want to share with us?
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity. This has been fun.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it too. And we can chat and figure out when we're going to do this again.
Sure. Yeah,
thanks. Thanks a lot, Doug. I appreciate you being on the show. Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek him.